right, we still got some, got our cowbells out there. Thank y'all so much for being out there to cheer on the runners and to cheer on a number of our folks. We're giving out water and Gatorade and cheering on. Thank you especially to Nikki Reed, executive assistant in our church office, who helped get all that together. She was also one of the first ones out there at 6 a.m. this morning, along with her husband Pete, and along with Elvis, who was out there pretty quickly, not too far after that. So a long morning, many folks giving out a lot of high fives, giving out a lot of water, a lot of Gatorade, and also giving out a lot of great music via the cowbells. So what else could you have to look forward to? But that kind of a morning. In preparation for the marathon Sunday this week, I pulled an old book off my shelf, a book that I had a little while ago. As a matter of fact, I took a picture of it because I wanted to show it to you. I've got it here. Here we go. The Half Marathon. You Can Do It. This book is just a remarkable book. I haven't read it in a while. You pull it off, but it gives you everything you need to know to be able to run a half marathon. It gives you training schedules. It gives you diet. It gives you encouraging words. It gives you ways to troubleshoot injuries. It even has a section on how to run a half marathon if you're 40, 50, 60, or 70. I'll go ahead and spare you the suspense. What it tells you basically is you can't run like you were when you were 30. That was a little bit of a depressing chapter, but it was okay. Now, I know what you're all saying. Randy, if only I had known about this book. If only I'd have known, I would have run the half marathon this morning. Right? Yeah, every one of you, we would have been there. I know. This book teaches you how to run and set a pace and set the course for a half marathon. Now, of course, that's not the most important question, is it? The most important question is, how do we set a pace? How do we set our lives on the course that God has set out for us? How do we do that? How do we run the race that God has given us? And I want to refer to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. These are some very powerful verses, and I want to have them out in front of us. You'll want to keep them with you as we have our conversation some this morning. Starting with Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, the writer of Hebrews has just finished in chapter 11 giving a Hall of Fame chapter where he talks about all the great persons of the Jewish faith, the great persons of the faith who lived out their faith in Christ, who walked the course of faith, first following God, and then later the ones who had known Jesus and followed Jesus. And it gives them as the examples. So they have these examples in their mind, and then verse 1 of chapter 12 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, all those folks he's just talked about in chapter 11, all those people of the faith that he's just referred to, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy set before us endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The idea is this: we are to run the course that has been marked out for us. So we have a couple of questions we have to deal with this morning. The questions are simple. What course are you running with your life? And the second question is, how are you running that course? What course are you running, and how are you running that course? Now, when we say what course are you running, what we're basically asking is the question of, are you simply living to exist, or are you living for a purpose? Are you living to exist, or are you living for a purpose? Because as this text implies, there is way more to life than simply inhaling and exhaling. There's way more to your life than respiration. There's more to your life than... We had a guy who, at the church that I served before I came here, every time I met him, he's an older gentleman, he had a great sense of humor. Every time I met him, I'd shake his hand and say, Hugo, how you doing this week? He said, well, I'm able to take in nourishment. And that was just his joke. Every time, I'm able to take on nourishment. You know, sometimes we live as if our whole life is simply about being able to get from day to day, from A to B, whatever A to B looks like from you, whether it's from getting through this stuff at the office that you have to get through, all the office politics to get your job done, or whether it's trying to chase after your toddler and trying to make sure she or he gets diapered, trying to make sure he gets down for naps, or whatever else your life might look like, whether it's trying to figure out what I'm doing in retirement, whether it's trying to get from this doctor's appointment to the next doctor's appointment, whatever else your life might look like, we get tempted to believe that our life is simply about getting from this day to the next. When what we need to understand is that every moment of our lives is pregnant with purpose. Every moment of our lives has some meaning and some potential and something that we are called to do with it. And that's what the text means when it tells us that we fix our eyes on Jesus and we run the course that He has marked out for us. Because what the devil will tell us, what he will tell us is that the course of our life is bland, it's boring, it's dull, and it's hard, and man, there's just nothing to it except to work for the weekend, eat, drink, and then you die. That's what we're told. And what God says is something different. There's a course that is marked out for each one of our lives. A course that found when we fix our eyes on Jesus Christ is a course of purpose, a course of hope, a course that can impact the world and the culture where we live with love and grace and compassion. And we can make a difference in how the people on our street and the people in our office and the people in our world live simply by the way we live in Jesus Christ. We're here to make impact. We're not here to keep our head above water. Run the race marked out for you is what the text tells us. We fix our eyes on Jesus, and that's our issue, isn't it? We're in a series on the Ten Commandments. Now, we're taking a marathon sabbatical or a siesta today from that series. We'll be back with Commandment 5 next Sunday. But what we have learned in this commandment series, particularly in Commandment 1 and Commandment 2, is there are many other gods, there are many other idols that are trying to grab our focus, that are trying to trick us into thinking that their purpose, their way of life is the way to go, it's the way to exist. And what this text tells us is we fix our eyes on Jesus. When we have the right focus, when we have the right finish line in mind, we are more likely to run the course in the right way. Now, let's say something about this course that we run. These marathon and half marathon runners today, they had a hard time. They had a hard go of it. But you know what they knew all the way along? They knew where they were going. They had bike riders riding alongside to make sure they went the right direction. They had police persons both on motorcycles and in cars to make sure they were going the right direction. They had cones. Oh, it was so good to see orange cones again, wasn't it? Oh, I just loved them. It was so good to see them. They showed people the way to go along the route. There was always someone to wave the group along. The more I think about our course that in life, it's not like that, is it? We have our eyes fixed on Jesus Christ, yes, but there are a lot of turns. There are a lot of twists. It's not quite clear all the time which direction to go. It reminded me of a story that I read this week about a gentleman who got it in his head that he was very concerned about the conservation issues in the Grand Canyon. He was very concerned about some of the environmental issues. So as a way to raise awareness of this, he decided that he was going to hike the whole Grand Canyon, all 750 miles of it. Now, just to give you an idea of this, y'all remember what the Grand Canyon looks like, right? I brought a picture of it here. I think we can put it up on the screen of what the Grand Canyon looks like. So this is a small section, a little bit rugged. That might be a nice good day hike, right? Well, I've got another picture right after this one. These are the two guys that said, you know what? We'll hike the whole thing, all 750 miles of it. Well, the whole of the Grand Canyon, if you could put it into a picture, looks more like this picture that I have. That's the whole of it. That gives you a little bit more. And we can't see 750 miles, so this is not by no means all of it. You know what they discovered when they started hiking the Grand Canyon? Of those 750 miles, about 80% of it does not have a trail. Now that sounds like real life. Real life is not an easily marked out race course. Real life is us focusing our eyes on Jesus Christ and trying to navigate this. Trying to get through the ups and the downs. Trying to hang on during the uphill sections where we're exposed to direct sunlight. Enjoying the rush of the river as our pace is able to quicken. But the course is not easily laid out, so we have to have a guide. We have to know who is going to lead us on a course that is rugged and not marked out clearly. That's why it is so critical that as we live, if we are serious about living a life of purpose, living a life that makes a difference, living a life that actually takes us through this life instead of gasping for air, that takes us through this life where we're able to overcome circumstances that are damaging and devastating. If we want to live that kind of life, we've got to have the right guide. And what Hebrews tells us is the right guide is Jesus Christ, the author and perfecter of our faith, the one who gives us the opportunity to experience faith through his death on the cross and his resurrection, and the one who offers us day by day direction in the way to live. Hiking through the course of life, through the canyon, can be lonely and scary. But it's the only way that we go to find purpose. The only way to live a purposeful life is not to duck under and try to keep our head under everything that is going on and the chaos that is moving. The only way to live and work through life and find purpose is to go with Jesus Christ as our direction and to go through the canyons. Isaiah gives us a little bit of an understanding of this. Just a little bit. Isaiah tells us in that famous chapter, Isaiah 40, this wonderful metaphor that he gives us at the end, where he says in verse 28, "Do you not know, have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." Folks, when we run our course with our eyes fixed on Jesus, there are days when we soar. There are days when we can run. There are days when we can barely walk, and there are days when we can crawl. But friends, we always have one who gives us the strength to keep going. Jesus is the one who gives us purpose. Jesus is the one who gives us strength for the course. Now we've talked about the course we're going to run. Now we have to answer the question, how are we going to run the course? And Hebrews 12 gives us those answers. How are we going to run that course? First thing we have to do is we have to throw off everything that holds us back. We have to throw off the sin that so easily entangles, the text tells us. We have to throw off everything that hinders, the sin that gets in the way. All of us have sins that get in the way of our course of following Jesus. Maybe it's the temper that we just can't quite get control of. Maybe it's the addiction that we wrestle with all of our lives. Maybe it's laziness. Maybe it's overspending or selfishness that keeps us from generosity. Maybe it's aimlessness in our living. Maybe it's apathy. Maybe it's a lack of love that we hide by saying the right words about love, but deep down we hold inside of us some kind of prejudice, some kind of thinking that we're better than a certain group of people for whatever reason. Whatever sin that it is, what Jesus tells us here is very simple. If you want to follow my course, if you want to experience the life that I have promised you, if you want to experience life with purpose, life that I created you to live, then you've got to throw the things off. You've got to throw the weight that you're dragging behind you off. You've got to put down those sins that continue to harass you so that you can follow with full throttle intensity, fully into God's direction. We have to take time to inventory our lives and throw off anything that is impeding us. And that, friends, is where Satan tricks us. Because Satan knows that if he can keep us busy, he can keep us from taking time to focus on what's going on in our inner world. If he can keep us busy, he can keep us from noticing those small sins that are creeping inside of us and keeping us from running our full optimum race. He knows if he can keep us busy, he can keep us weighted down and exhausted. So friends, we have to, just like we talked about last Sunday, we have to be willing to step back and rest and ask God's help and the Holy Spirit's help to inventory what is happening in our hearts and our lives so that we can strain away, confess away the sin, and run a pure race. We have to throw off everything that gets in the way. We have to develop a disciplined pattern of living that helps us put things down. This leads to something else the text tells us. It tells us that we have to develop perseverance if we're going to run the race of following Jesus Christ with our eyes fixed on Him. If we're going to run a life race of purpose, we've got to develop perseverance. Now, perseverance is a good SAT word. So for all you folks learning that one, it's a good SAT word. But perseverance, we can define it in two words. You ready? Don't quit. Don't quit. That's what perseverance means. It means whatever comes up, whatever hardship you face, whatever difficult decision you face, whatever issue you face at work, whatever issue you face at school, whatever issue you face in your family, whatever you are wrestling with, whatever it might be, when it comes to following the race of Jesus Christ, don't give up. Don't quit. Endurance, John Ortberg tells us, is the gift that we bring to the table in this journey of following Jesus. Regardless of what's going on in our life, we can choose to keep going. I'd lean back in again on that Isaiah verse we just read. As I mentioned, there are some days when it's easy to walk the walk with Jesus. It's easy to follow the course. We're soaring. Everything feels great. Then there are days we're running. And it's like some of the runners we saw today. It's like, man, they're going fast, but they look like they're in pain. We may run fast, we may get through it, but it may be hurting. We may be breathing hard. We may get a side stitch or something like that. And then there's days we can barely put one foot in front of the other, but we don't quit. We keep walking. And then there are days that we're crawling. Life hurts so bad. Something tragic's happened. Something unexpected, a downsizing, a loved one getting a health diagnosis, a loved one passing away, and we have to wrestle with all of that and grieve all of that. There are days, friends, where it's hard to get out of bed. On those days, just don't quit. When you're hurting like that, friends, you're not supposed to be soaring. You're not supposed to be running. Just don't quit. God, in His ultimate power and mercy, will take the offering that you can give, and He will make up that difference. But when those days come, just don't quit. That's what perseverance is. The good news is perseverance can grow with the aid of brothers and sisters in Christ. Because you know what? I looked at all those runners today and thought about some of my running days before I got a little hobbled. And I learned something about running. I can run by myself. And I did that many times. I ran races by myself with all sorts of new friends that I made all around me. And I ran training runs by myself. But you know what? It's so much easier to run when you have someone running with you. You know why? Number one, you'll show up because you know somebody's waiting on you. Number two, when you start hurting and you start aching a little bit, that friend can say, hey man, keep going. We got this. Only another mile. Let's go. Keep going. The first part of verse 1 in Hebrews 12 says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, friends, in this running of the course that we do, in this following Jesus that we don't do this by ourselves. We have thousands upon thousands of Christians, followers of Jesus, followers of God, who have gone on to live with Jesus for all eternity, who are still paying attention to us, and they are cheering us on. When we make a decision that honors God, they are telling us, yes, keep going. They're ringing their cowbell for us and saying, keep going. Make another one. Stay the course. It's worth the sacrifice. It's worth the run. These folks from the past are cheering us on. In our culture, in our day, when it's tough to follow Jesus, when it's tough to be the church, they're saying, you know what? In our day, it was tough to be the church too. Don't give up. But then, you know what? We've got all of each other. Look around you. This is just a part of the people who are on your team. How many of you folks normally come to 8:30 worship that are in here? Let me see your hands. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For being willing to be here at 11 o'clock today. Thank you. 8:30 and 11 o'clock. We're all a part of the same team. By the way, 8:30, 11 o'clock, and 12:30. We're all a part of the same team. We're part of the same church family, whether we speak English or Spanish. And guess what? We're all running the same course with Jesus, and we don't run it by ourselves. We cheer each other on. We give each other spiritual high fives as we pray. We give each other words of encouragement as we see each other in worship. We give each other words of encouragement as we see each other in our Sunday school classes or in the small groups. We're not just here to have ourselves entertained. We're here to be ones who push one another forward in growing to be like Jesus. We are each other's cheering section. We are the ones that pick each other up when the week has been difficult. We are the ones that pick each other up when our families are suffering. We are the ones that lean into one another when it's hard to keep going and following Jesus. We are the ones that wrap arms around one another and pray for each other. We are the most encouraging people on the planet. At least we're called to be. Let's live into that. Let's own that. Because we have been given the gift of Jesus Christ. We have been given the gift of new life. We have been given the gift of hope all eternal. We have been given the gift of hope in this world. And we have been given the calling to spread that hope, not just within us, but to the world. How can we spread it to the world if we're not spreading it to each other? Encouragement is our native language. We are to spur one another on, Hebrews 10 tells us, to love and good deeds. Who have you spurred on in your church family today? Who have you encouraged that's in this room today? Who have you prayed for in this room today? Who have you prayed with in this room today? Who have you looked at and said, I want to get to know someone who is new today? Because I'm their teammate. I'm going to stand with them. Whether they're not a member of this church, whether they've been a member of this church for 50 years, or whether they have been coming and haven't joined, how am I going to be an encourager and stand with folks? Because friends, we don't run this race alone. We are the cheering section. for the church to be the church, and for God's mission of love to reign supreme in our city and in our world. We're the cheering section to make that happen. Our city saw just a piece of that today. How do they see that year-round from us? A friend of mine sent me a story this week that was really cool. It tells about a mom and a dad who are out watching their son running in a track meet. And he's running, and they really have high hopes for him to actually win this event. He's running the mile, which would be, let's see, carrier one, whatever, 1,600 meters, thank you. Would be the 1,600 meters. And he's running the mile, and he's running around the track, and they're cheering him. And about, lap one and a half, his left shoe flies off. Flies over the runners, lands in the infield of the track. I wish somebody caught that on video. That'd be kind of interesting to replay over and over. And they began to be concerned about him. Folks were laughing and chuckling a little bit, but then they began to cheer him on because he kept running. He didn't go after a shoe. He kept on running. And the crowd began to cheer louder. And as he cheered louder, his teammates started cheering him louder. And he started running faster. He ran. He passed the third place person, the second place person, the first place person. He's well into the third lap now, and his sock comes off, or almost comes off. It's like just on his toes, and it's kind of flapping as he runs. And he's still running, and he crosses through the tape, and the tape flies, and his sock flies, and everybody cheers. Why'd everybody cheer? Because somebody didn't let an obstacle keep him from stopping to run the race. Friends, all of us have obstacles. Don't quit running. And brothers and sisters, friends, anyone who can hear my voice, if you see someone that you know, a follower of Jesus or not, who is starting to quit, don't judge them. Don't shake your finger at them. Run and give them a cup of water. Run and put an arm around them. Run and whisper in their ear and say, "I'll run it with you. Let's go." But we're not going to quit. Why? Because when we were yet sinners, when we were in our sin, God didn't quit. Instead, God sent His Son, Jesus Christ, who lived a perfect life, a life of love. And then He died on the cross. And through His death and through His resurrection, through His broken body and spilled blood, we get to run the race. And that race only ends when we get to Jesus. Thanks be to God.